Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I'm Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney. So what?
No time to mess about. Life logistics, we've got a lot to get through. What we did was, for a change, we put out a thing on the Patreon which just said, ask us anything. It doesn't even need to be a life logistic. It can be anything you've ever wanted to ask us. And some of the responses, Sam... Some of the responses, Sam, have been facile, unwanted, pointless, trivial. There's a few good ones in there, but for the majority of them, Jesus Christ. I mean, we'll do our best, but... Fucking hell.
We don't deal with trivia. We only deal with life's bigger questions, really. You're certainly wasting your access to us if you ask us something trivial.
Yeah, I mean, we'll highlight one or two of them, I think, throughout the episode. Before we get to them, there's still some stuff left in the emails as well on the life logistics side of things. This is a weird one. You might be able to answer this one, actually, Sam, more than myself. It's from James... And he says, there's some preamble, which I'll not go all the way through. He recently gave up drinking, blah, blah, blah. It's not too hard, he says. He's got a 17-month-old kid, which obviously being sober when you've got a 17-month-old kid's easier than being pissed. He says, the worst effect of sobriety I found is the extreme tiredness when socialising. Now, you like to have a nap when you go to a family gathering, don't you? So this could tie in with your lifestyle. He says, I'm pretty sociable until about 9:30 p.m., at which point I feel like I've been kicked in the head and just want to sleep. I find it difficult to move around and I can't think of anything to talk about. If I'm out with a wife, I get it in the neck for being antisocial and yawning all the time. I've tried everything. Afternoon naps in preparation, coffee, Sudafed. That's everything. Yeah.
Sudafed, wow.
He says, do you have any tips for warding off the tiredness or is it a lost cause?
Well, how long does he say he's been sober for? Not that long,
right? He just
says
recently. Yeah,
recently. So this was something that I remember really well when I first gave up drinking for the first, I don't know how long it lasted, but certainly the first couple of months at least. I was basically asleep at all times. And I genuinely think it was like my body just fucking saying, right, time to like... what does Doctor Who do? Regenerate, right? I genuinely think that. And I think, and I've heard it's quite common, and you just sort of like, your body has to readjust because you've been managing your body's energy levels in artificial ways, right? And so it's sort of unlearned a lot. So it has to recalibrate. By the way, as I always say, I am not a doctor, not officially. I do... Let's just say in my mind, I am a doctor and I perceive you to be a doctor as well, not just a medical doctor.
There's all kinds of doctors. There's like shaman as well, isn't there? You know, we aren't medically qualified, but, you know, give a good advice. I think that's what we are.
I'm not a doctor. I have to say that to cover myself legally in case you do follow any of my advice and die and your estate try to sue me. However... I would say as a caveat to that, that you probably should follow my advice. Anyway, I just think that, I don't know what it is, but it's really, what you're going through is something that I remember really well, just being asleep all the time. Now, nowadays, I do like a nap, but it's not out of control. To be honest, the reason I sleep at family get-togethers is because I just can't be asked talking to all of my relatives. Not now. It's not that I don't like them. It's like I like talking to them individually or in small groups. But when everyone's all together standing in, I just, there's various things about it I don't enjoy. So I just, I prefer to shut down my body and my mind. Right, shut it down. Right? Because you know me, I'm living out loud. If I'm awake, right, I will not struggle for things to talk about. But sometimes the things I talk about, they're the sort of things that we talk about. You understand it, the campers understand it, but some of my family, they look quizzical when I might talk for a long time about digging or dick turping or something.
Can I suggest something? Is the reason possibly because there's such a large crowd of people and that you are not the centre of attention? So therefore, you've decided to remove yourself. And I'm not going to use the word flounce, but you've decided to remove yourself from the situation because you cannot be front and centre the whole time.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. Because I'll like think, all these other people are talking about boring shit. They want to be listening to the sort of shit I've got to say. And then I think, them, they don't deserve it. So then I'll just go and shut my body down.
Yeah.
But the reason it's not a flounce is I do it before a flounce is even on the cards. So in the past, I might have gone in, tried to impose my personality on the situation. Right. Yeah. And if it doesn't get traction immediately, then I will flounce. So now what I do is I don't even bother trying. I just go straight into my nap room. Anyway, none of that's really relevant to James. James, what I would say is a couple of things. One is I think your body will recalibrate if you stick at sobriety and you will end up having, if anything, an excess of energy. But you do have to wait. It doesn't happen overnight. And so it's well worth
sobriety
the wait.
Prize.
Exactly. And it is a sobriety prize. And then the other things is like struggling for things to talk about. Well, I mean, look, for fuck's sake, cry. If you only had energy or subject matter to talk about when you had booze inside of you, then that is not, then you got to fucking think that that's shit stuff that you were saying. So you shouldn't miss it. You shouldn't miss the stuff you were saying or doing when you were pissed up because that was just contrived artificial stuff. You will find your way. I mean, I didn't know about all of my main passions in life and interests until the fog of toxins that had overwhelmed my mind for so long. It was only then that I remembered the stuff that really meant a lot to me, like digging and interesting ghosts, birds. Not women, but, you know, actual birds with wings flying about. The business of cats. These are subjects that it takes a while for your mind to start, like, remembering.
The stuff of things.
The stuff of things, exactly.
Yeah.
So, The Stuff of Things by Sandra Lady.
That's what we should call this podcast.
A life of passion and beauty.
Change the name of this podcast, The Stuff of Things.
Stuff of Things is a great name for a podcast.
Before I forget, Shut My Body Down would be a great pop funk 1980s hit. Maybe like Jimmy and Stewart, someone like that. We don't have to take our clothes off. This follow up, Shut My Body Down.
It's an 80s pop soul classic. Yeah. Definitely
Shut
the singers.
My body down.
Straight in at number 12 in the charts, all the way from Philadelphia in the United States. This is Jermaine LeFrou with Shut My Body Down. And the Philly Soul Machine. Yeah, so anyway, my advice is stick at it. Rediscover the real, authentic passions and interests that exist within you, the stuff of things. And may I say, while we're on this subject, that, you know, the cat community is obviously something that I'm very passionate about in my local area. And
while I'm on the subject,
I discovered two amazing cat facts. Which should be a new section with its own sting on this podcast. Cat facts, right?
Yeah.
One, there was a cat called Gypsy that I right. thought belonged to the school because it was just always hanging about in the school.
Cool cats.
When you went in through the gates in the morning, Gypsy, who looked about a million years old, right? It's yeah. all flea bitten and that. It was always just sat on a little bench as a sort of a greeting cat as you walked through the gates. So you'd walk through and everyone just go, all right, Gypsy, morning. And it'd go, like that, right?
Morning.
And I thought,
morning, dickheads. Keep the noise down.
Right. I thought Gypsy was a school cat. And then years later, I found out that Gypsy, in fact, belonged to a kid in my daughter's class who lived across the street. And right. he was just so fucking bananas because he was so ancient. Mm. He kind of thought the school was his home as well because it was so near. Right. So he generally went home to kip at the end of the day, but he spent his daytime hours mainly in the school.
I said
it's quite mad that Gypsy was like the school's cat. And my daughter revealed to me that when she was at that school, it used to like just come into lessons. And like if they were doing like computer studies or like, you know, anything practical, it would do a classic cat thing and just like jump up and climb over what they were doing or sit on the keyboard, you know, like cats do, right?
Yeah.
And the teachers didn't do anything, right?
Yeah.
Because it had these special privileges. Gypsy, it would just fucking walk about and do as it pleased. Fucking access all areas, mate. Do what I fucking want in this place. I've got more privileges than the fucking headmaster. Right, so anyway, I was astonished by that, and that's Gypsy, who is now dead. But then that led to another conversation about the library cat. In the local library, there's a cat, right, yeah. who reckons he fucking owns the place, and he just wanders in off the street and just has a fucking wander about and goes up to people and gets on their laps while they're reading a book, fucking climbs up on the shelves, and again, the library staff do nothing because it's the library cat. It's like, all right, cunts, having a fucking good time in my library, are you? I'm just here to have a little look around, make sure everything's being fucking run proper. I pop my head in once or twice a week, right? But that's a good bonus, isn't it? A library cat.
It is. There's been a bit of extra info from, obviously, me kids have got two houses and they've got three cats around at their mum's. And there's another local cat which has emerged on the scene, which comes into the garden now and kind of hangs out with them a bit. And he'll go over and he lets me daughter pick him up, stroke him and all that sort of thing. Very friendly.
Oh, that's nice.
And he's got his name on his collar. And his name is Peter. Peter the cat.
That's an amazing cat
Hello,
name.
I'm Peter. I'm new in town.
Peter? Oh, Peter, what have you done now? I've always loved the idea of calling a cat or a dog John.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny, isn't it?
Well, we called the dog Jeff for 3 days when we first got him.
Oh, that's good.
And it just didn't stick, so he ended up with Oscar. But I think, you know, I regret that now. I might change it back. It's dead easy to change a dog's name. It only takes about a week.
Yeah, and the dog doesn't give a fuck.
You just start calling it by the new name and they get it eventually.
He's like, fuck, is that what I'm called now, Dad?
Oh, yeah, I don't know what
what you're called. And stop fucking calling me Dad. I'm not your dad. You are to me. You've been like a dad to me. Oh, shut the fuck up, you needy cunt.
Exactly like that, yeah. I'm having a look. See,
anyway,
if there's any other? What you got?
James,
there?
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I think it does.
That cat chat.
Right. What else have we got? Let's have a look in the
on the Patreon mailbag.
On the Patreon, ask us anything thing. Right. Oh, I'll just start with the first one. Darren Nugent says, if you could set up your dream radio station, what presenters would you have and what time slots would you put them in? Fucking hell. There's a lot of admin in that question, isn't there? I'd have the ghost of Kenny Everett. I'd bring him back. I'd have Jason Cundy would be on, obviously, doing the football. fucking hell. I don't know.
I wouldn't have Cundy doing the football. I would have him doing more like just lifestyle.
Life logistics.
Yeah. Cundy, Everett. Who else is good on the radio?
Mostly dead people, isn't it? move on.
You know, over the years, the radio shows I've liked have been, well, to be honest, like, you, I mean, you probably won't agree with this, but when Christian O'Connell was on XFM years ago, like in the noughties, it was fucking funny.
It was, I never really heard funny. It, so I don't know. I never heard it.
Oh, yeah, because it's a London station. And then he went to Absolute. And it was still all right, but I didn't really ever listen to that station because I didn't like the music. But in the noughties, Christian O'Connell was on XFM and he was really, really funny.
The best radio I've ever heard was Danny Baker and Danny Kelly on TalkSport in the mid-90s.
They used to be on... I never listened to TalkSport back then.
It was so good. It's as close to what we do here as anything I've ever heard before.
Right.
And since they used to do a pre-match show from about 11 till about 1, I think, and then they spend the afternoon in the pub, and then they do 5:30 to 7.
Oh, yeah.
Post-match. It was fucking great. Loads of those shows are on the internet if you look for them, and they're just magnificent. Brilliant radio. Anything else? Don't know. Not really fussed. Don't like radio much. It's too much of it.
I like Six Music, as I've said lots of times. I like Desert Island Disc, but only the good ones, because like a lot of times they go, oh, this woman was a scientist, and I'm like, I don't care what records she wants to take to a fucking island.
What films was she in? Is she famous?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I like the ones just about mainstream celebrity. Actually, Danny Baker's one's a particularly good one.
Yeah.
But as I've said before, the best ones are Kenneth Williams, who I think did two, and right. They're both absolute fucking knockout.
They'll still be available then, I guess, because the whole archive.
Oh,
on
all
there,
of them are.
Online.
If you go on BBC Sounds or whatever, they've got the full archive. It's incredible. You can listen to any fucker. You can listen to Paul McCartney doing it in like 1981.
Oh.
You know, you've got. Funnily enough, you've got Kings. We were talking about Kingsley Amis recently. But because he wrote that funny thing about Roald Dahl,
yeah.
You can listen to him.
Is there a Roald Dahl one?
Probably is. I can't remember. I would have thought I'd have listened to that because I have listened. I've gone right back deep into the archive to when Roy Promley did it, who's like the worst interviewer of all time.
Yeah.
He goes, and tell me what happened then. And they'll go, well, you know, I had a very complex... I've never told anyone this before, Roy, but my father revealed to me when I was 15 that he wasn't my real father and that my real father had died on a mission to kill Hitler in 1943 and blah, blah. And his dying wish was for this other man to raise me as his own. And I only discovered this at 15 and it changed my life forever. And I've never told anyone this before. And Roy Bromley would just go... I see. And what is your next record?
Lovely sitting there reading the Telegraph while it's open.
Oh, do get on with it. I've got lunch booked in after this. I don't want to be late.
Yeah. Yes, Roald Dahl did do it with Roy Plumley in 1979, and it is on the internet, so we'll have to listen
Brilliant.
To that later on.
Oh, yeah, I might listen to that this afternoon.
Inside the mind of Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
Jalapeño.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
This is the one for you, Sam. Felix says, are adverts now shit compared to the ones directors like Ridley Scott and Alan Parker worked on in the 70s and 80s? Mm. Or is it just that we remember the good ones? Now, Alan Parker, of course, recently passed away and he was massive in adverts. He probably changed adverts, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He was the best one of all of them. And what's interesting is that he's also, by a mile, like, was the least sort of up himself or pretentious or show-offy about it. Like, advertising's full of, like, awful dickheads. And they all convince each other that they're making great art, even though, obviously, almost all ads are sort of unintelligent, unfunny, blights on our culture. But Adam Parker, do you know what? Adam Parker was from North London, Islington, and his dad was a worked on the railways painting railings, right? So people used to say to him, "What did your father do?" And he went, "He was a painter." And they go, "Oh, that's wonderful. What sort of painting?" And he goes, "Well, he
abstract
was quite avant-garde.
Impressionist."
And he would go, "Well, he was quite avant-garde. He only worked in one colour." And they go, "Oh, fascinating. What colour was it?" And he went, "Grey." And I went, "Oh." "And why was that?" He goes, "Well, because he worked for the railways, he had to paint the railings grey." Right. But he's a fantastic story, because the one good thing about advertising was it was, especially then, not now, it was a meritocracy, right? Mm. So it was the first big British industry that allowed in, like, working class people to top jobs, particularly in the 60s and 70s, because they realised, as consumerism boomed, that they had to speak to teenagers and young people who weren't necessarily posh themselves. So it became clear to the companies and their clients, fuck, we need to talk to people in their own language, and we can't do that if we're just full of, like, fucking Oxbridge graduates, right? Mm-hmm. So they started desperately looking around. So Adam Parker was working in the post room of an advertising agency, right? And he'd go around just dishing out the fucking letters, and because he'd left school at, like, 15 with no qualifications. And he'd go into the top bloke, the Don Draper type person's office, and he'd see all the ideas from his creative staff laid out on the desk, and he'd pick them up and look at them and think, fuck me, this is a load of old shit, isn't it? Right? And he thought to himself, fucking hell, but these lads are having a right good time. They all seem to get paid a lot more than I do, and they go out for long lunches. I could do better than this. So he started doing his own ones and leaving them on the desk of the creative director anonymously. Right. Creative director sees them and starts going, who the fuck's doing these? There's one gig that all these ideas I'm being given are shit, apart from one bloke who, and anyway, he tracks him down. It's the lad in the post room. They can't believe it. So he offers him a fucking job and quadruples his salary overnight. Mm. Alan Parker becomes like a machine who's just knocking these fucking ads out nonstop because he writes in his own, to a large extent, because he wrote in his own dialogue. He spoke in a London sort of, you know, dialect and was funny. And had an amusing turn of phrase. So these ads, he was just fucking making, they're falling out of his arse because he didn't dress it up in anything. So he became the top guy in the industry when he was still quite young. And then he decided to become a director. And the thing that he did as a director that was unusual is he started casting people outside of London. So if you look at ads in the 60s, they're all like, all the people in them are kind of Margot and Jerry from The Good Life. And all of the voiceovers are always like this, right? And Alan Parker became a director, and he would send casting agents anywhere but London, right? And he wouldn't cast actors either. He'd cast real people. Mm-hmm. So they did those. His really famous ads at first were the ones that were, what do you call it? Was it Findus or Birdseye, where it was two kids always sat at a table eating burger and chips? And it was two kids, and he'd go like, "My mom says that if I eat Finder's crispy pancakes, then, you know, then I'll get them, then Father Christmas will remember me," and all that sort of stuff, right? And they were funny little, like, sketches almost.
Yeah.
And he made them because he'd go out of London and cast different people who looked like real people and spoke like real people. Mm. And so the ads were really successful, not just because they were funny and won awards, but they were really successful for people like Birdseye and Findus, because they were like, so that was Alan Parker, who's like a top fucking bloke. And yes, the ads were better then because of that, because they were really funny. And now ads are all for global brands. They don't want humour. Funny enough, they don't want dialogue because they want to make one ad that can translate anywhere around the world. Right. So they want as little dialogue as possible. Whereas in the 70s and 80s, all the funny ads like For Mash Gets Smash, George the Hofmeister Bear, all those funny beer adverts they used to be, they used to actually make you laugh. It's because they're all dialogue driven. So, but anyway, Alan Parker was a great guy. And the last thing I'll say in that little lesson about the ad industry was the two rivals, Ridley Scott and Alan Parker, in the 70s, they both came up through the ranks, both working class. Ridley Scott from the Northeast, of course, Alan Parker from London. And they were these two working class guys who just fucking went like rocket ships, right? And they were massive rivals, right? Parker and Scott, because they were both like, and they had these things like, Alan Parker was the comedy one who could do really good dialogue. And Ridley Scott was the one who was a beautiful visual artist, right? And they tell this story where he goes, if a script came through from an advertising agency and it said, we open on a beautiful Caribbean beach at sunset, that was a script that Ridley Scott would always get. And if it says, we open on a dreary, rundown kitchen in a council estate, you know, in Sheffield, that's like Alan Parker's script, Alan right? Parker's. And Alan Parker was really fucked off about it because he got as much work and as many awards as Ridley Scott, but he never got to go to nice places. But in the industry, those ones that Alan Parker did that were always like two people in a kitchen, whether it was for washing up liquid or frozen meals or whatever, they were generally called 2C cards, which meant two cunts in a kitchen. Which I think it's got a great Sir John Fanny powder ring to it, hasn't it? But that's what they called it. They'd literally go in the other, I've got a great 2CK script if you want to get it made. Two cunts in a fucking kitchen. Bang, knock it out, send it over to podcast.
Brilliant. Right. Right. Message from Jamie. Should I move in with my fiancé next door to my in-laws-to-be? They've offered us the house to rent while we save up for... Exactly. They've offered us the house to rent while we save up for a family home. My mother-in-law bakes cakes, cooks and grows veg, etc. My father-in-law's retired and has his own workshop where he tinkers with bikes and cars. Can you see any negatives? Negatives are flashing all over the fucking shop there. Also worried I won't want to leave as it's a cottage in a little village and I bloody love it up there. Any advice? Well, if anything, it's going to inspire you to save up for the house for yourself, I think, because I can only see you being incredibly irritated by them within about 3 weeks maximum.
There's also a control issue, isn't there? There's a control issue when the in-laws get involved. Although it's on the face of it, it's nice that they're going to help out financially. On the other side, a lot of them, that will come, it comes with strings attached, and suddenly they're in control of shit, because you get a lot of parents who are obsessed with controlling.
They're not even knocking on the door. They're letting themselves in.
Oh, my God.
Left, right and centre at any time, night or day.
I heard, I heard that when Ashley Cole was married to Cheryl Cole, that, like, her mum, who was quite notorious, like, they had a very, very, very close relationship, Cheryl Cole and her mum, and she took her mum everywhere with her, which is nice. But Ashley Cole, he was like, he lived in a house. They didn't have kids. So it was just the three of them, him, Cheryl, and the mum, right? Out in Surrey somewhere. And it was driving him mental. And anecdotally, the thing that when he realised, no, this can't go on, and they realised the marriage was just fucked, right? He was playing FIFA in the front room, right? After a hard day's training for Chelsea, right? The mum walks in because it's time for her soaps, right? It has me soaps! Right. Right. And, do you know, I'm sure this is bullshit, but I just found it such a funny story that apparently she just walked in and without saying anything, she just pulled the wires out from the fucking FIFA, from the PlayStation to TV. She just yanked them. She didn't even say anything to him. She just walked in and went, yank! And they fucking wires came out the TV and she switched to the fucking EastEnders. And he was like, fuck me.
That was when I knew this marriage was at an end.
Right, that's it. I'm going to have to go and have multiple affairs.
Fucking hell.
So just beware, in-laws. Yank it. One minute they're offering to cover your rent. The next minute they're yanking your wires out, mate.
I mean, I don't know what Jamie's situation is. Does he work? Is he working from home at the moment? You've got to just bear in mind. Also, as well, if you do turn down their very kind offer, which is a kind offer, then is there going to be any kind of lingering resentment afterwards? Because you've knocked them back on that. I would. Mm. I would accept it, but I would use it as an incentive to save up for your own place.
Yeah, exactly. Don't let it drag on. I mean, I know people who've like given, like rich parents who said, like, we'll give you a house or we'll pay your whole deposit. And then after that, fuck me, they're around like nobody's business. They're deciding, they're deciding how you parent the kids. Do you know what I mean?
Jesus Christ.
I know one set of parents that vetoed the name choice of the kid.
Really?
See what I mean?
What?
They rang up a mate of mine. They said, listen, we really don't, we've been talking overnight and we really, really don't like the name that you've chosen for the baby.
Fucking
And he's
hell.
Like, oh, right, okay, well, we kind of made our minds up and it's sort of our choice. And I go, well, I think that we have earned the right to sort of have a say in this sort of thing. It is our grandchild. And it was more or less inferred, listen, we helped you out with the deposit on your house, so I think you'll find we fucking named the child. It's like Rosemary's Daughter shit, rights. That. Yeah, we've got naming rights to the baby. That's what we purchased. Check the small print, cunt.
Quid pro quo, mate. Have a look. Wow. Finally, one from another GM say, hello, cunts. I have an increasingly hairy body, albeit with an entirely bald head. I'm fairly comfortable with most of this extra foliage, other than that growing on my back. I made what now looks like an error last year in shaving my back before a foreign holiday, and it has since grown with a vengeance. Any ideas on how to curtail its incessant growth? Just don't worry about it, man. Fucking hell. It's just some hair. Yeah.
I don't have a hairy back, but some people assume that everyone does. Like, one of my mate's wives said to my wife, oh God, it's a nightmare, isn't it, when you have to shave your fella's back? And my wife went, I've never had to do that. And she went, what, does Sam just let it grow out? And she went, no, he doesn't have a hairy back. And she was incredulous. She went, oh, come off it. Like that. Oh, I went, no, he just doesn't.
Sure.
I wouldn't lie about it. And you go, that's utter bollocks. Of course he's got a fucking hairy back. Why is he being so vain and not admitting it? I'm like, look, I'll admit plenty of stuff. I've got all sorts of weird shit on my body. I mean, you've all heard about my wart issues, right? Which
yeah,
I'd argue is more disgusting than a hairy back. But I'm just saying, I don't have a hairy back, so... You know, I don't know how to fix it, but sometimes you've just got to say, you know, yeah, I've got just a hairy back, let it all hang out.
I've
I think some of our listeners are younger than us.
I've got like sort of very fine hairs on my back that have grown over the years. Mm. They weren't there when I was a younger man. They've emerged as I've gone into middle age. I'm not fucking arsed about them. My main worry about my back is how to put sun cream on it when I'm on holiday. Because I'm a single man. Do you know what I mean? It's not, if you miss a bit, you're burnt, you're fucked, that's it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't sunbathe on my front. I mean, I'd be like in the sea, but what I quickly do is I try to get in quite deep so only my shoulders are out the top. I do. And then as soon as I'm out of the sea, I cover up again.
Just prowl around in the sea, just this head floating around on the surface.
I'm a sea prowler, mate.
A bald head.
Just see my little bald head bobbing around.
Super.
But no, seriously, I think a lot of our listeners are younger than us, and that in the younger generations, there's a lot more obsessive attention to detail about the male appearance. Like when we were younger, life was easy. We lived in the patriarchy was really strong, which was a bad thing. But the point I'm making is that everything in culture surrounded like sort of bullying women into thinking that they had to aspire to physical perfection. Right. Mm. And men just didn't have to. But then like consumerist culture got to the point where they're like, right, we've bullied women to the absolute maximum we can profiteer out of it. So how can we expand our profits further? Let's try and do the same thing to young men. Right. Mm. So then they started doing the same thing to young men. Now we didn't have to go through that because when we were younger, the like, marketing and stuff hadn't cottoned on to like hassling us about our appearance. The attitude was, you can look like what you fucking want, mate. The women will still come flocking.
The most exotic product was probably Lynx deodorant, and that was as far as it went.
Yeah, exactly. Stick a bit of fucking brute on before you go up the nightclub and you're good to go, mate. But just, mate, I hope she's had a manicure, had everything fucking plucked, been on a diet. Do you know what I mean? Put on her Wonder Bra, right? And then suddenly it's like, so now I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that both men and women should just be free to fucking look how they want, right? But basically, they've performed the same trick on young men. And now young men, we did an episode before, didn't we, about how, I can't remember why, but I went through a phase of suspecting my pubes were Millwall.
You did, yeah. They turned against you, yeah.
My pubes turned against me. And I had to shave them off. So, no, but it was because I was in the office once and people were talking about shaving their pubes. They're all younger than me.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I said, what are you fucking talking about? And I'm not joking, right? The lads, more than the women, were astonished, right, that I openly said, as it was just, oh, I don't fucking shave my pubes. I've never shaved my pubes in my life. What's the point, right? They were, like, astonished. It was like I'd said, I mean, what would it be like? It'd be like I said, oh, I never use I never wash. It was like, that's what I'd, they said that, they were like looking at me like, that's disgusting, mate.
I still can't get my head around that, you know. That's
shaving
that's
your pubes.
The thing. That's the done
thing. Yeah, well,
now.
I did it once after that because I thought I'll give it a go, see what all the fuss is about, didn't I?
Because you're Britain's top journalist, obviously, yeah.
I thought I'll give it a go, see what the fuss is about. Everyone says it's great. Let's fucking see, shall we? And I think it was just once, maybe twice, I did it. I reported it on the podcast at the time. And I've never gone back to it because what's the point? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Didn't add anything to my life at all.
Well, it comes back to what we were saying last week. It's almost as if among the young people, it's the done thing. And as we've said, there is no done thing.
There is no done thing.
The done thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly right. Okay, that's it. Time to shut up shop now for another week of Life Logistics. We'll have some more next week.
Yeah, we've solved your problems.
Get your problems and questions and all that in, and we'll do some more next time. TTFN, dickheads, all the best.
Yeah, keep it canty, lads and ladies.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.